From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Now let's join our host, Jim Williams, on ABQ Connect.
We're joined in studio by Daniel Sir. He's the managing attorney for the Liberty Justice Center. Daniel, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim.
Now, what's the proper way for me to address attorney? Should I call you counselor?
If only, you know. That is the nicest thing that most people say to attorneys.
Yeah, Daniel, here's the thing, and it's interesting you bring that up. We've just in our government, not only are you for liberty and justice, but I think you're also for respect, kindness. Why is that missing now from our political process?
Yeah, I am so saddened by the way in which cancel culture is just taking over so much of our politics that we've really weaponized the relationships we have just between people such that being a good citizen now results in putting your job on the line, right? Just donating to a candidate you believe in, supporting a nonprofit group that's active in the public square, all of a sudden you just being a good citizen engaged in our democratic process leads to real repercussions, right? I mean, we look back just a few years ago, you know, the CEO of Mozilla was an internet browser company. He supported a cause he believed in. It was traditional marriage, Proposition 8 in California. And they drove him out of his job. They drove him out of Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And his isn't the only example of how this culture has just taken hold of our country. And you're right. It's sad. And it's why this show like this is so important, right? We need places where we can have civil, respectful conversations. We need universities and schools that teach our young people to have civil, respectful conversations. Democracy doesn't function unless we protect free speech, allow people to share their ideas in the marketplace of ideas. And if we can't respect each other when we're having those conversations.
You know, in addition to free speech, that doesn't mean you can say anything you want without repercussions. Because
right.
You are responsible for what you say.
I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old. We're constantly reminding them, you can say what you want, but we're going to hold you to it.
Yeah, and I think that's really true, too. I mean, I'm hearing all the time, I hear people all the time, because, you know, we largely have an audience of people that are church members. People that have a faith in Jesus, you know, the evangelical community is really large. We have a large Catholic audience. These are people of faith, people that are listening intentionally. It's not background noise here on KLYT. You know, we say listen to the light. And they want light shown on all of these secrets that seem to be permeated by certain people in politics and certain parties in politics. And what's interesting is that the progressives particularly are constantly.
Often we're told that we want to create an inclusive community, that the reason that we need these policies in place, like a bias incident response team, which is this common thing now on college campuses, that we're going to have a team of counselors that are going to intervene whenever we have a bias incident. And we need that because we need to create an inclusive community. But what we end up doing is actually excluding people, that the irony of creating an inclusive community is we say, if you bring politics that we don't like, or if you share your faith with another student in a way that other student finds offensive, we're going to exclude you from the community. We're going to say, no, you keep your opinions to yourself. You keep your faith to yourself. You can show up at our school, but just don't say anything out loud. And that's just one of the ironies of the way the modern, I think, liberal cancel culture works, is that it ends up excluding people in the name of inclusivity.
Daniel, tell us about the Liberty Justice Center. And you've just completed speaking at the Marriott Hotel. You're here with the Rio Grande Foundation. Of course, Paul Gessing, their president, is a frequent contributor to our program. Tell us about the Liberty Justice Center.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm glad, Jim, that you got it right. I was on a different radio program the other day, and I was introduced as Daniel Sir from the Liberal Justice Center. I just want to make clear, that's not right. Although I was on a different radio program, and it was Daniel from the Liberty Justice League, which made me sound way more like a superhero to be from the Justice League.
Yeah.
Very impressed my kids that night, their dad being from the Justice
superhero
League.
Superhero attorney dad. Yeah, I like it.
We can only aspire. So I'm here with the Rio Grande Foundation, as you mentioned, and we're talking about an important topic, and that is the ways in which the COVID pandemic have shaped our legal landscape, that all of us as Americans, we have rights, we have constitutional rights, and they have been tested in really profound new ways over the course of the past 2 years. I think it's sort of incredible if we step back and just think that 2 years ago, basically right now, 2 years ago, schools were closed, workplaces were closed, churches were closed, right? They were telling you could not go, you would break the law if your church was open on a Sunday morning. And you know what? The American people were actually good sports about it. Mm-hmm. Like, we were willing to accept the most invasive regime of control over our lives that we have seen probably since World War II, if not before that. I mean, just incredible restrictions on personal liberty. And yet, even as time went on, even as the science developed, even as cases went down, government kept up with the restrictions. Government continued to impose on our liberties. And so thankfully we've had Americans who are willing to step up and say when enough is enough, to reassert our rights to religious liberty, to personal freedom, to free speech and free gatherings against a government that I think otherwise would just continue to restrict these things were it not for Americans who are willing to get engaged, willing to go to court to protect these fundamental constitutional rights.
Daniel, is there any legal foundation for what the incumbent party, how they use the word science? Because we kept hearing the word science, and I guess I never was surprised about the so-called science because we've all been raised in a public school system that's still calling evolution science. Mm-hmm. And there's so much data, so much actual science showing that has nothing to do with science. It's a fable. It was a hypothesis.
Or that isn't willing to recognize the baby in the womb, right?
Exactly.
That there's the science. Yeah, so this is a great point. So Dr. Fauci and a lot of the other people who have been trying to run our lives for the past 2 years under the banner of science, you know, they justify it. Except when we're holding a Black Lives Matter rally, in which case apparently the science is that no COVID gets spread when we're protesting for the right causes, quote unquote, right? You're going to get together at church on Sunday. Lots of COVID going to get spread in the choir. Can't let that happen. You're going to go protest for a liberal cause. No COVID here, right? Mm-hmm. I think so much of the credibility gap that has developed between our public health establishment and the American people is really a hypocrisy gap. That people have watched mayors and governors going out to restaurants, not wearing masks at the Super Bowl, not wearing masks at the Met Gala, and yet feeling like my kid still has to wear a mask to go to school, right? They've watched the shifting stories from Fauci and others on what the quote-unquote science means. The fact that apparently the pandemic ended as soon as President Biden's poll numbers started going down because the American people were unhappy about it, right? There's just been so much politics rather than science. And the American people aren't stupid. They can see when their government officials are running their lives and restricting their freedoms, not based on actual science or based on numbers that you can experience in not just the news, but in your own life. And they're just fed up with it, and now they're fighting back, and good for them. They shouldn't have to put up with it.
Well, you did refer to science started coming out some 90, 120 days after the lockdown. I'm just going to share my own opinion, which probably means nothing, but I'm an American citizen, and this was my perspective. Okay, none of us knew how to handle a pandemic. So when I look at Michelle Lujan Grisham, the governor of the state of New Mexico's reaction, she had a plan. She was doing something. But when you're 120 days into something and you start to get data showing that masks were not as effective, it's almost like putting a wire fence over your mouth, and that's how effective it was at blocking viruses. Now, did it block droplets and all that? Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe there was some benefit. I'll give them the benefit of that doubt. But then when you start talking about locking down schools, we had a couple of schools. One in particular I'll mention, which was Hope Christian School in Albuquerque. They never locked down. They continued in-person learning. They did have a couple of COVID, not outbreaks, but people testing positive. And what they did is they followed some protocols. They isolated those students for 10 or 14 days. They continued to teach those students when they weren't at school. There was nobody that got really ill, very seriously. And they handled it, and they kept people in school. The health, the grades, everything for the students showed that it was way more positive than what our public schools did and the lockout mandates that we had.
Not to mention the learning loss
yes.
for all of these kids, right? I mean, it's part of where we lost perspective as a country, right, is that we assumed fighting the pandemic was the only good. And obviously fighting the pandemic and maintaining public health is a good, an important good. But the learning loss that these kids experienced, the social loss, the isolation that kids experienced is incredible. And honestly, you know, just talking about kids, like I'm a parent. My wife read Andy Crouch's wonderful book, The TechWise Family. Many of your listeners probably know, you know, as parents, we struggle with how do we maintain homes that are wise about the use of technology. And so she'd gotten it for Christmas in 2019. And so we were going to go on this like limiting screens kick at the beginning of 2020. And then the pandemic comes and everything is on a screen. School is on a screen. Battleship with your friends, right? Playing board games is on a screen. Seeing grandpa and grandma is on a screen. And now, lo and behold, like more of our kids in society are screen addicts, right? And they don't want to go play outside because they've just gotten used to the government telling them they have to be inside. And so there are all these other ramifications for our society at large that we just really haven't thought through, that the science is coming out more and more showing the costs of the lockdown. And I really hope we have a reckoning as an American people to be able to look back on this with some objectivity now and say, was it worth it? Did our elected officials make the right calls? And what can we learn for next time around to have wiser policies than just automatically defaulting to restricting everybody's freedom?
I don't want to think negatively, but if we had another pandemic next month, would we handle that better because of what we've learned?
So not only do I think we wouldn't handle it better because we have the same public health bureaucrats who are just in a lockdown and control mode, the same public health bureaucrats who are just drunk with their own power. I am concerned, Jim, about the next crisis that's not a pandemic but uses all of this newfound government power. Right, that now we have governors in New Mexico and other blue states that have discovered, man, I can run the state at the signature of an executive order. I can declare a public health crisis, and I can do pretty much whatever I want. Right, so what happens when we have a quote unquote epidemic of gun violence, and so we're going to use our emergency public health powers to take away people's Second Amendment rights? What happens when we have a climate change crisis that is labeled an emergency such that we can exercise unilateral executive power? I'm really worried about the expansion of government power. And it's part of why I, as a lawyer, feel it's so important that we have these court cases that are pushing back and trying to put executives back in a box to restore some of the checks and balances that are fundamental to protecting our freedom.
Daniel, what was the focus of your speech at the Marriott for the Rio Grande Foundation?
Yeah, so the first is what we've been talking about, to look back at what happened. The second is to focus on the ways in which the structural components of our government are just as important for protecting liberty as the Bill of Rights, right? I think often as Americans, we look at the Bill of Rights and we think, man, we love the Bill of Rights, right? We have the right to our religious faith. We have the right to free speech. We have the right to bear arms. We have these criminal procedure protections. But Justice Scalia, formerly on the U.S. Supreme Court, he would always point out the Soviet Union actually had a longer, more detailed Bill of Rights in their constitution than in our American constitution. But it didn't matter, right? The KGB could still come and haul you out of your home in the middle of the night.
Sure.
Because we didn't have the structure of government with the checks and balances between the different branches, between the states and the federal government, that we had the respect for the rule of law, that a judge could issue an order and expect the police to respect it, right? So it's these structural limits. And what we've seen in this pandemic is the court cases that have succeeded, it has not been this question, can the government do this? It's about which branch of the government, which part of the government can do this, right? So take the OSHA vaccine mandate, this idea that 84 million Americans have to be vaccinated, that there is an unelected bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., who can impose a nationwide mandate that would cover one-third of the American people because they work in an employer with 100 or more. Like, when that goes to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court said a major question like that is not one that an unelected bureaucrat should decide. That's what we have Congress for.
Yes.
Right? And so these structural protections, having elected officials be the ones making important decisions, that is just as or more important for protecting our liberty as having the wonderful guarantees we enjoy in the Bill of Rights.
Now, I'm hearing you mention the Supreme Court as one of our branches of government for the check and balances. So we have the judicial branch, we have Congress, and we have the president. I'm sitting back thinking to myself, our forefathers, and I have to make a statement because this is a Christian lens that I'm looking through. Our forefathers were not all Christians. Some were Spiritists, some were, but they were wise in that they said, we recognize the nature of man.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize mm-hmm. that we're self-centered. They're talking about themselves. They're not thinking they have it all together. And so they devise, I think, a God-given governmental system, not perfect because there's human beings. We're all flawed, and that's what they recognized. And this is a way we can protect ourselves from ourselves. If you are in public service at the state level or at the federal level, it seems to me that regardless of your faith position, you need to have some reverence, yes. some perspective yes. in that, look, this is not about me. I'm here to represent my constituents. It's not about being reelected. It's about representing our people correctly and protecting them. Is that wrong?
No, that's absolutely right, Jim. So you're first of all right to say our founders were brilliant, right? Part of the reason I think we can say Providence was at work is the idea that George Washington and John Adams and Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, like any one of these men at any time in history, would be a world historic figure. Mm-hmm. The fact that they all happen to be, you know, living in basically Northern Virginia or Philadelphia, all within a decade of each other, is incredible. There's no statistical way you'd say you'd have that concentration of brilliance other than the hand of Providence at work. And you're right. The government they gave us is one that's aware of our brokenness as humanity, aware of our flawed nature as humanity. But also the fact that we need government, right? Paul in Romans says that government is a gift from God in Romans 13, that it's there to protect us. Paul and Timothy says we need to pray for our leaders because they are appointed over us.
And by the way, we should be doing that now, even as we're having this conversation,
amen.
Right?
And so when some of them could use the prayer. So when we have a government that recognizes human nature, the other thing the founders wrote, right, read the Federalist Papers and you see this, is that we want a government of laws and not of men. That we want a government that makes decisions based on what is right and what is legal, and that we shouldn't have any individual exercising incredible power. And let's be honest, looking at the last 2 years, we had several points where certain individuals were exercising incredible power, whether it was the governor at the state level or whether it was Dr. Fauci or others on the federal level. Like, we had the concentration of power in particular individuals. And I think the American people are finally taking a step back and saying, maybe that wasn't a good idea, right? Maybe this is why the framers gave us the government they did, is to protect us from from this power being concentrated in particular people. And my hope is, and in fact, my expectation is, right, that the Supreme Court, as you just mentioned, is got at least six justices who are really committed to this principle that it's about the law and that they need to take a humble approach to their role, right? Humility is one of those aspects that we should see in all of our public servants, but especially in our judges, to recognize it's not about them. It's not their values or their wisdom. It's the law, and it's what our democratic representatives have chosen that should be what governs.
We are in studio with Daniel Suhr. He is the managing attorney for the Liberty Justice Center. He has spoken in Albuquerque actually earlier this afternoon. So we're going to talk to him more about the Liberty Justice Center and about the way he tries to educate people and bringing to the front of mind things that we ought to be thinking about as voters, really. We'll be back with Daniel Suhr. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
KLYT, the light of New Mexico, welcomes For King and Country back to Albuquerque. God only knows what they say about you. You'll see all the energy of For King and Country on stage and hear their excellent songs. For King and Country, Thursday night, May 19th at Tingley Coliseum. For King and Country, our friends of KLYT, the light of New Mexico. I see you dressed in white, every wrong made right. I see a rose in bloom at the sight of you.
VBS at Calvary Church is at 9 in the morning, June 13th through the 17th. We'll explore what it means to make waves in our lives, sharing God's love with people around us. Tell your parents to get you signed up at calvarynm.church.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Today's show is sponsored in part by Ben Lucero at Indigo Mortgage. 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700. Or online at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect.
We're back on ABQ Connect with Daniel Suhr. He is the managing attorney for the Liberty Justice Center. Tell us what people can find on your website about the Liberty Justice Center and how you try, what you try to provide in terms of information for people on your site.
Yeah, so we're at libertyjusticecenter.org. And really, our website is focused on breaking down for average people the importance of the cases we do, and really focused on free speech, focused on empowering parents in education, and pushing back against cancel culture. That the cases we bring, the work that we do, it's really focused on protecting those fundamental American principles. And our website tries to take those cases and put it in everyday language for people who might want to learn about the importance and just how these principles work out in real life, that we feel like our rights are under attack. We feel like we live in a world where we say the wrong thing and our job is on the line. We do the wrong thing. We talk about our faith. Our job is on the line. And so thankfully, the Constitution and other legal tools protect us. They protect our rights. But that only matters if people are willing to bring a case. And so our website is really a function of our mission, which is not just in the courts of law, but really in the court of public opinion, to remind the American people why their rights are worth fighting for.
I'm so interested in all of the different things, because you've had to be really, really active. And probably now I'm hoping that you're seeing a change, at least culturally. I didn't mention this to you before we started talking about it, so I don't mind, I don't want to ambush you, but I can't help but laugh when I see that the founders of the organization, Black Lives Matter, have now been exposed, going out and spending money frivolously. Literally, I'm not aware of a documented case they've helped anyone that is black in any way, poor, rich, whatever, except themselves. They've taken millions of dollars. I've talked to a number of black pastors. There's a pastor here in Albuquerque. His name is Clarence Washington Sr. He's written a four-book series called Hijacked, How Dr. King's Dream Became a Nightmare. And he believes that when you read the I Have a Dream speech, he believes Dr. King was given a God-given plan to bring blacks and whites and every other ethnicity together, and that forgiveness and love would be the basis for a revival in our country.
Amen.
And even for people that weren't going to become believers in Jesus, they would be protected by the people of faith that were coming together.
So I am so glad you brought this up, Jim. One of the areas I litigate is around the way critical race theory is infecting our schools. So I represent a young man. He just graduated from high school in Las Vegas, Nevada. And as a required class in order to graduate, it was called Citizenship in Society, which sounds innocent enough, but it was basically critical race theory. And so his teacher sat all the students down in this class, and she went through slides about how if you are white or middle class, you are privileged, you're automatically racist, about how if you come from a Christian faith background, you are automatically homophobic and prejudiced, about how family teaches homophobia and prejudice, and therefore why she, as the teacher in the school, is on a mission to re-educate you about your values. Like, these are in the PowerPoint slides she presents to a bunch of high school seniors as part of a required class. And my client, William, this is inner city Las Vegas. It's all African-American students except for William, who's biracial but whose skin is white. And so he's sitting here in class listening to her say white people are automatically privileged and racist, and he's the only kid who looks white. He's sitting there listening to her say your family and the values they teach you and your faith, they're all inherently racist and inherently prejudiced. And he's being raised with Judeo-Christian values at home. And so we sued. His parents, his mom went to the school and said, we need to get William out of this class. This is totally in conflict with what we believe as a family. This is totally inappropriate for the school to teach, and we need to get him out of this class. And the school said, if you take him out of this class, he will get an F, and then he will not graduate. So we sued them. Thankfully, just before graduation, the school backed down and let him graduate anyway. But the lawsuit goes on because we have to establish this principle that schools can't do this. You can't do this to kids. Schools should not indoctrinate children. They should educate children. We mentioned Dr. King. I represent another group of parents in Loudoun County, Virginia. We're fighting. It's a high school and middle school. They have a bias response team that responds to bias incidents within their school. And there's a memo that lists bias incidents and saying things like, I don't believe in racial identity, or I don't believe in white privilege, will be classified as a bias incident. So my question is always, if I just said, I believe you should be judged on the content of your character, not the color of your skin, would I be guilty of a bias incident?
Sounds
the answer
like
is yes.
It.
The answer is yes, right? This is the point at which our public schools have come, that they are indoctrinating our children with this critical race theory and all this other stuff. It's not teaching them reading, writing, and math. And rather than reinforcing a love for our country, they're undermining a love for our country. And thankfully, we're seeing this parent revolution across the country, that parents are fed up, they're sick of it. And once again, I think, you know, in this context, like in COVID, the American people are standing up and fighting back, and good on them.
Daniel, and you, one example might be the school district in San Francisco, which is under Nancy Pelosi's district, and her influence is profound. But they voted out three people on their board of directors and voted in three people that were more concerned about getting kids back into school in person than changing the names of schools that they wanted to cancel because of whatever imperfection those people had in their lives.
Yeah, this is a great example. If it can happen in San Francisco, it can happen anywhere, right? And it is happening. Parents are standing up. They're showing up at school board meetings. And honestly, the school establishment doesn't know how to handle it, right? I mean, it is sad to say, but most school boards have never had parents show up before. They've never had parents pushing back. And whether it's on these curriculum issues or on in-person learning and masking in schools, like, parents are showing up, they're making their voices heard, and they're making a difference, right? I think we saw this in Virginia. Parents are voting for people who think that they should be in charge rather than the teachers' unions.
How important is it to vote and to actually have freedom to vote?
It is profoundly important. It is so critical that people of faith, people show up at the polls, make their voices heard, because these are decisions that will be made for us. Right. And so if we don't show up, if we don't make our voices heard, if we don't exercise our rights, we will lose our rights. Because the sad reality is there are folks in politics who don't respect our rights. There are folks in politics for whom religious liberty will always lose to a different agenda. They just don't think it's that important.
Kristi Noem, the Republican governor of South Dakota, had an interesting statement. One part of it was, I treated our citizens like adults. And she provided information. Does that work for you to educate people and treat them like adults? Can we make our own decisions?
Yeah, it should seem simple to just say, like, let's believe in the American people a little bit, right? And that is one of the things we have lost over the course of the past 2 years, is that we've had people in D.C. who don't think we're smart enough to understand the science. Right. I'm using air quotes. I wish I could. It's a TV show, not a radio show. Right.
That's right.
Like they think we're not smart enough to understand. They think that we can't look at a bar chart and get where the numbers are going, that they know best. And we just need to trust them. And unfortunately, they have proven over and over again that they have lost our trust. And yet they still blunder ahead, telling us you shouldn't have Christmas with your family and your kids should wear masks to school. Like, and they shouldn't be surprised then, come November, when people do vote and they vote with passion and enthusiasm and they vote for new leadership.
How is the Liberty Justice Center funded? Can you use donations? Is it a 501c3? Tell us about the structure a little bit.
Yeah, we'd love for people to support us. Again, it's libertyjusticecenter.org. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. We don't take any money from the government. We do what we do for all of our clients for free. It's a joy, really. Like, I have the joy of representing people who need help. And I always have two clients in every case. My first client is whoever I'm representing, right? I represent a group of nurses fighting a vaccine mandate because they're pro-life nurses. I represent parents fighting critical race theory, right? That's my first client. But my second client is the Constitution, right? I get the privilege of going to court every day, not because I have a client who's paying me, not because some business is fighting with some other business for money, but because the Constitution is worth defending, and there are generous people who believe that too and
but
are
Daniel,
willing
that
to support
was,
our
the
work.
Constitution was formulated a long time ago. It's outdated. Don't we really need to update it for today's citizen?
You know, the last thing we need is to have judges be the ones doing the updating, right? So we can update the Constitution. It's called the amendment process. We do it occasionally when we need to, right? Like, we had a Civil War, and then we passed a couple of amendments to fix things, right? We recognized finally that women deserve the right to vote. Like, the Constitution has been amended over time to reflect the changes in society, and it's been a good thing. The problem is when we have judges who look at the language and decide that their job is to do the updating, based on their values or their read of society's values. And the problem is that the judge's read of society's values is based on who they hang out with. And they don't hang out with normal people like us. They don't hang out in Albuquerque. They hang out at Yale. They hang out overseas in Europe. They hang out in Georgetown Social circuit cocktail scene. And so the values that they imbibe, reading the New York Times every day, they're not actually reflective of the American people. One of the reasons I love Clarence Thomas so much is that he and his wife, on the summer break the Supreme Court take, they get in an RV and they go out in Walmart parking lots and they drive across America. They see America. And whenever they bump into people and they're making small talk and somebody says to Justice Thomas, "What do you do for a living?" His answer is always, "Oh, I'm just a government lawyer."
Yeah. Right? That's like, funny.
People like that, people who understand the heartbeat of America.
But that's also that humble, yes, reverent approach that I was talking about earlier. Many times there's people that have positions of authority and they think they have power.
Yes. So I'm sure many of your listeners are J.R.R. Tolkien people, right? Lord of the Rings readers. Mm-hmm. So I'll just ask you, Jim, why do you think Frodo is a hero? What is heroic about Frodo?
He does not covet the ring of power and to take over everything.
So often in life, we think about heroes and they're the people who use power, right? Contrast Frodo with like Batman, mm-hmm, right? What makes Batman a hero? He gets the bad guy. And if he has to kind of bend the law, if he, you know, doesn't read you your Miranda rights first, that's okay. That's heroic, right? We'll just call Commissioner Gordon later. And there are a lot of judges who think their job is to be Batman. There are a lot of judges who think their job is to quote unquote do justice as they define it. And if we have to kind of bend the law a little bit, if we have to kind of bend the words to get to the right result, well, that's my job as a justice, right? And in law schools, we lionize, we elevate the judges who write the great decisions that, you know, create new rights, right? And so we end up with the people who write Roe versus Wade being the ones that we lift up as models to law students. The Warren Court is the high point of the Supreme Court in every law professor's view, when in actuality, there's that kind of other heroism of Frodo that says, I have the ring of power. I could do whatever I want as a judge. I could rule in line with my views and values, but my heroism is resisting the temptation to do what I want and laying it down in service to a greater good, a greater power, which is the American people as they've expressed their will through Congress and the Constitution.
Daniel Sir, the managing attorney for the Liberty Justice Center and Studio. We have one more segment with Daniel. We'll be back after these messages. Stay with us.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we are all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Rochelle.
I want to encourage you in your leadership, number one, to question everything and be willing to change anything. If your leadership strategy is similar today to the way it was before the pandemic started, you probably have a very bad strategy because the world is very, very different. Let the numbers speak to you. Know your numbers, study your numbers, look at your numbers, let the numbers speak. The numbers almost always tell the truth. And that makes me pause and question everything. What about this strategy do we still like? What needs to change in your leadership? Because we're in a very different world. Question everything and ask yourself, what do we need to change? Do we need to change our structure? Do we change our strategy? How has your core business changed?
That was Craig Rochelle with a KLYT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast. On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
We're back on ABQ Connect with Daniel Sir. He's the managing attorney for the Liberty Justice Center. Hey, I want to ask you about New Mexico. I'm a native New Mexican. Sometimes, and I hope nobody's offended, but I am one of these, so I get to say it. Sometimes I catch ourselves whining like we're the only ones facing difficult education challenges. We have a governor that thinks she controls and runs everything with her Emergency Powers Act, still in place, by the way, as of today. Is New Mexico the only place this is happening?
I wish I could say it was, just for the other 49 states to say that, you know, freedom is thriving. But the sad reality is no, that we have seen in so much of the country, and not just blue states, right? I think there's this perception out there, well, there are blue states and red states. And in red states, we have freedom in Florida. And in blue states, everything is awful. And there are certainly plenty of blue states where We've just seen, you know, these huge restrictions on liberty. We've seen, you know, restaurants shut down and schools shut down. But there's two other dynamics that are still true. First of all, there's a lot of purple states, right? And so I'm, for instance, from Wisconsin, and our governor is a Democrat governor, and he tried to use all the same executive powers that you would find in any other blue state. But the other harsh reality is we have these like blueberries in the tomato soup, right? That you have a city like Austin, Texas, in the middle of Texas. And even though Texas is red and wonderful, like Austin is filled with techie hippie liberals, right? And so they will do things like try to ban Uber and Lyft. This was a few years ago. They tried to ban Uber and Lyft, right? Or all of their schools will be shut down way after the rest of the state is reopened. Or you'll have individual mayors imposing mask mandates, or individual school districts where the teachers' unions really control what happens in these urban centers. Have things been tough in New Mexico? Absolutely. But we saw these shutdowns across the country. A lot of the country's come back, but there are still purple states, and there are still big blue cities in red states where the restrictions on freedom continue, where the power that has been exercised is waiting to be exercised again, where the teachers' unions still run the schools, and we've got a lot of places that need a lot of work in the fight for freedom.
My oldest son lives in San Diego. He's a CPA. And he got married in October.
Congratulations.
My daughter-in-law, Kenna, what a wonderful lady she is. I had a very surprising conversation on that trip. I love to go out to the beach really early in the morning before the sun comes up. It's a little cold in San Diego.
I'm from Wisconsin. There is no such thing as a little cold.
Okay. Well, San Diego is just amazing. I can't believe it. So I go out at 5:30 in the morning. I'm on the beach in front of the Dell on Coronado Island, looking out at the Pacific Ocean. It's kind of dark, but I can hear the waves. And as the sun's coming up, you can begin to see the sky turn red. And then you can see the ocean. And then, you're still hearing all the sound. It's very soothing. So I watched that. I sat in my little lawn chair and on the sand and was sinking down and finally got up. And I threw my chair in the back of my truck. And then I walked over to a little restaurant that I like. I walked in and there were two women sitting there. It was very early, and people don't get up real early on Coronado Island early in the morning on a Saturday. So I walk in and these two women were very friendly. I want to reiterate, I didn't instigate any of this conversation, but it was one of my most valuable conversations I've ever had. It was very enlightening. So they said, "Oh, hi, how are you? Where are you from? What are you here for?" I told them, "My son's getting wedding. Getting married. What do you do?" "Oh, I host a Christian radio show." And one of the ladies, she was smiling when she said this. She said, "Oh, you don't want to talk to us because we're lesbians." And I looked at her and I said, "Are you really saying you don't want to talk to me because I'm a Christian?" Here's the surprising part of the conversation. Very, very lighthearted, very kind the entire time. These two women both looked at me, and I can't remember who said what, but they said, "You're going to be surprised when we tell you that the exact opposite of what you're thinking is true. We have finally figured out," and what they were referring to is a community that they're part of. They said, "We have finally figured out that the progressives don't want to protect our rights. They want to control us." And we've actually found out that it's the conservative Christians, it's the conservatives that, even though they don't agree with us, will protect us and the way we want to conduct our lives. And I smiled and I said, I literally have tears in my eyes because it gives me encouragement that people are finally hearing through the noise.
Yeah. So I think two points to come off that great story. The first is perhaps obvious, but we need to say it out loud anyway. Like, liberty is good for everybody.
Yes.
Right? Liberty is good for everybody. Religious liberty is good for Christians. It's good for Jewish people. It's good for Muslim people. It's good for everybody, right? Because it gives us the freedom, the space to live out what we believe without government coming in and telling us otherwise. Liberty is good for not just how we conduct our lives in general. It's good for our businesses and how we create and innovate. It's good for our schools and not having schools teach our kids our values, but letting us teach our kids our values, right? Liberty is good across the board. And if you have different values than I do, you should be able to teach your kids your values. Sure. And I should be able to teach my kids my values. Neither of us should have the public school choosing which values my kids learn, right? So liberty is good for everybody. The other corollary reality is that federalism, which is just a fancy way of saying respecting local communities, is good for everybody. That if you want to live in California, in a state that reflects your values, in a state where you're going to be around like-minded people, and I want to live in Texas, in a state that reflects my values and that I can drive my truck and carry my gun and pursue my hobbies, and like, we can both be Americans, right? We can both respect each other's unique way of life, each other's values, and yet still have a shared common cultural identity and have shared basic values around the Constitution, around the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. They're endowed with their creator with rights. These are the things that we can share while at the same time having space to live out our lives in liberty.
Daniel, how is freedom to give people that are not citizens of this country benefits that even our citizens don't receive? That can't be legal.
You'd be amazed what can be legal sometimes. So one of the things that's important for any country to function is to be clear about who's in and who's out, right? Who the citizens are and what the Constitution covers. And the reason that's important is because with citizenship comes both rights and responsibilities, right? We talked a lot about rights on this show. But we really haven't talked about the responsibilities part yet, that as citizens, we pay taxes. As citizens, we sometimes have our children go into military service, right? I mean, you're in San Diego, right? Like, I'm sure there was probably a huge aircraft carrier off to the one side of your view looking at the ocean, right?
Yeah, like, several.
Yeah, and you probably pay a lot in taxes to help make that aircraft carrier happen, right? Mm-hmm. There are responsibilities that come with citizenship. Voting is perhaps the most important one that we've already talked about in this show. And so we need to define America in a way that is open, that says to anyone, if you can subscribe to this shared creed that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with rights, that those rights are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, right? The lines that we all love, that doesn't matter what your race is. That doesn't matter what other country you may have come from. You just got to buy into that. But you have to do it through the formal process of citizenship. Because one of those values is respect for the rule of law, and respect for the rule of law is part of what we teach in citizenship, and it's also reflected in the process of becoming a citizen.
When you talk about cancel culture and educating about that, when you talk about wokeism, I've been told that's a religion unto itself, even though they'll claim it's secular. It is a religion. It has a set of whatever their underlying
values.
Values are. So I sit back. Do we need to teach 65-year-olds like me, or do we need to teach Gen Zs or everybody in between?
So all of us need to be, everybody over 18 can vote, right? So
yes.
All of us need to be aware of the ways in which our rights are under attack. I think the way that we talk about it the way in which we relate to people is different, right? So give an example. Like, one of the things that really concerns me is the ways in which Twitter and Facebook have been suppressing free speech, right? And I know everybody's excited about Elon Musk taking over Twitter, and
why is anybody concerned about that?
Well, so, I mean, for so many people, Twitter and Facebook have been limiting their speech, right? That for especially people who hold conservative views, they've been suspended. They've been kicked off the platform. And so you're not able to share your thoughts if they're not the quote unquote right thoughts. If you're questioning the status quo.
Prime example was Donald Trump.
Right. And so one of the ironies of that is that the First Amendment is most important when you have an unpopular idea or when you're challenging the people in power, right? The First Amendment is there for all of us. But if you're in the majority, if you're with the popular crowd, if you're part of the power structure, the First Amendment doesn't do a lot of good for you because you're already in the good graces of the New York Times editorial board, right? It's only if you're on the outside, if you're challenging the power structure, if you're asking hard questions, if you're pushing back against the elite consensus, that you need the protection of the First Amendment. And unfortunately, what Twitter and Facebook have been doing is just imposing the elite consensus on issues like COVID, on the election integrity problems, and just imposing the elite consensus and preventing people from speaking. Now, if you don't have a Twitter and Facebook account, to get to your earlier question about how we reach different people of different generations, that doesn't mean a lot to you, right? You can't relate to that necessarily. Obviously, if you're a young person, like, this is where you live now, is on your phone, on these apps. And so the fundamental value of free speech, like, that holds true regardless. But where we talk to people and how we talk to people, that's going to vary, but that doesn't change the fact that all of us have a stake in ensuring free speech survives.
I saw a meme on Facebook, and it was a picture of a news reporter talking with some Amish people. And the caption said something like, and I have to paraphrase, it said, we didn't get sick because we didn't watch the news and didn't know we were supposed to.
Right. Like, there's this attitude out there, I think, that the American people are like, experiments in a petri dish, that actually the Washington Post is currently hiring for a reporter to live in Texas to figure out what's up with these conservative Christian Southerners. And that's, you know, in one sense, that makes sense. Like, that is a reflection of, like, there's a lot of people who believe these things. There's a lot of people who hold these values, these conservative and Christian values. But if you're a swamp creature, if you're reading the Washington Post every day, if you're reading the New York Times on Sunday morning, going to the church of the New York Times, you don't understand. You don't understand NASCAR. You don't understand the Second Amendment. You've never handled a gun. You've never been hunting. And so we need elite institutions that reflect the American people. Or otherwise, we're just going to throw all the elites out, which is part of what's already happening.
Yes. I have to ask you about the border, because you've brought up Texas, you've brought up Arizona, two red states, and New Mexico's right in the middle, and we have probably the most unprotected border in the United States. So my question is really, our vice president has not visited the border.
Even though she chairs the border task force.
Yeah, she chairs that.
I remember?
That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's part of the question is, what is there anything we can do legally? I also want to inject something. I come from a banking background. So, you know, when I left banking here now 3-4 years ago, I could do a background check on you. I could do even at an FBI level background check. I could pull your credit report in less than 30 seconds. So, I believe it's unfair for somebody that wants to immigrate into this country and do it the right way. I think it's wrong that that takes 10 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that is ridiculous. We have the technologies. We could easily figure out with the government of Mexico and all the South American countries how to, you know, figure this out. We really could. We could do that in 2 or 3 years. We could get that all figured out for everybody on the border if we'd start spending money doing something like that. Immigration is what our country was built on. So I do think there's some unfairness in it. But to let everybody in with no requirements and then have them be entitled to all these benefits, we can't afford to do that.
So you asked me what can be done legally?
Yes.
I'm going to give you the simplest possible answer. Enforce the law, right? That a huge part of the problem is, I think we have good laws on the books. Our laws are built on this idea that citizenship matters, that our southern border should be secure, that we have the border patrol, that it's a crime to cross the border illegally. The problem is not that the laws aren't on the books. The problem is this administration won't enforce them. The problem is this administration is playing catch and release with people at the border and just letting them in after crossing through a checkpoint. The problem is that employers aren't complying with the citizenship verification or green card verification requirements, and there's no repercussions to it. The problem is now we've got this new initiative from the Biden administration on Title 74, where we're just, again, repealing progress that has been made by just executive fiat. You look back to the Obama administration, the ways in which we couldn't get the DREAM Act passed through Congress, and so they just did it by executive fiat, right? Like, the laws on the books are good. We just need a president who takes seriously his oath to see that the laws are faithfully executed. That's what you do when you swear in as president. You take an oath. It's in the Constitution to see that the laws are faithfully executed. It'd be nice if we had a president who took that seriously on the border.
The Liberty Justice Center is bipartisan. And you've already told us about not all the problems are in red state or in blue states. So I'm thinking about the upcoming election. We have primaries coming up. For New Mexico, for example, we have a governor's race. We have six or seven people vying for the Republican nomination against the incumbent, Michelle Lujan Grisham. How does an individual approach public service in a humble but vibrant leadership way? Those things can't be in conflict with each other, can they?
So I think the Bible really provides us with some great models for what leadership should look like, including in the public square, right? So take somebody like Daniel. I'm a Daniel, right?
Mm-hmm. I think yes.
My parents didn't know that I was going to choose a life in public service and politics and the law when I was 0 days old. But like God knew what he was doing when I got the name Daniel. You look at Daniel in the Bible, and on the one hand, he is absolutely faithful, right? And when the government comes in and says you can't continue to pray, you know, Daniel does it anyway and bring on the lions, right? But you look at the other parts of Daniel's story, that Daniel early on is, you know, almost like an intern, right, in the court of the king, and is challenged to eat the food that would violate Jewish dietary law, right? And he, as a 19-year-old, has the confidence of his convictions to stay. And God not only recognizes and rewards that, but eventually Daniel rises to be second in charge in the kingdom, right? Joseph rises mm-hmm. to be second in charge of the kingdom. Like, what? So clearly there's no incompatibility between being in high public office and being a person of faith. And hopefully, as your listeners evaluate candidates, you know, I think they should be asking themselves, am I voting for somebody who reminds me of Daniel or Joseph? Am I voting for somebody who is absolutely grounded in their convictions, who is willing to operate in an environment that doesn't always reflect those convictions, right? One of the things that's true of both Daniel and Joseph is they were not in like exclusively Christian or exclusively Jewish environments. They were in a hostile, foreign surrounding culture. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, to where we started earlier, they were respectful, they were honest, they stayed true to their convictions without being jerks about it. And those are the kind of qualities that we should look for in our leaders overall.
LibertyJusticeCenter.org. Daniel Suhr is the managing attorney for that organization. Again, how can our listeners help your cause and what you're doing?
So pray for us, right? That would be an easy, obvious answer is pray for the work we do. Pray for our judges, pray for our elected officials. In fact, my reading this morning, I do a devotional called He Reads Truth. Mm-hmm. And my reading this morning was from 1 Timothy, where Paul exhorts us, like, pray for the king. Pray at all times and for everybody, but pray for the king. So pray for your lawyers, pray for judges, pray for people who exercise authority in our society. If you can, support us financially. We promise to put it to good use, pursuing cases that defend freedom and the Constitution. And then, obviously, we're just talking about Twitter and Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at LJ Center. It's a great way to just stay connected, learn about the work we're doing, and throw us a like once in a while, and hopefully we'll reach more people with the good news that the fight for freedom continues, and we're even winning sometimes.
Amen. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my gosh, Jim. Thanks for being here. It was a pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.